step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome to the podcast of the Loadseaters, episode 1299. For Wednesday, the 19th of November, 2025. I'm your host, Luca, joined today by Harry and Carl.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking all about Thomas Massey having a major win with the Epstein Files release. We're then going to be talking about what's been happening with the Muslims and Christians over in Dearborn in Michigan. And then we're going to be wrapping things up about talking about all of the unironic, I'm sure, wonderful benefits of diversity and the melting pot.
Yeah, we'll catch up on how the melting pot's doing.
Excellent. All right. So with all that said, no announcements. Over to you, Harry.
All right, then. So this is a further development in the Epstein Files case, which has turned into a huge circus since the beginning of the year when we were kind of all just hoping that it would be released without a massive fuss. And then the administration flip-flopped back and forth over whether they were going to release anything. There was last
week... It's on my desk, Harry.
It's on your desk. But I thought they don't exist. But
they it's don't.
On
it's
their
a
own.
Democrat
it was a Democrat hoax, except until we released a load of these emails, which was what happened last week, last Wednesday on the 12th of November. The Oversight Committee, which I believe is mainly run by Democrats in the House of Representatives, released a load of pages of documents received from the estate of Jeffrey Epstein. You can click on them and go to them. It takes you to a Google Drive. I tried to go through it, but it's massively disorganized and kind of a pain in the ass to find anything in there. There's loads of stuff in there. People have been making lots of articles and pieces about what is in there, but it's kind of a pain in the ass to try and find anything specific in there. There was deflections going on at the time. This was from the official White House page on Twitter saying, let's talk about the Republican Party's record-setting achievements and not fall into the Epstein trap, which is actually a curse on the Democrats, not us. Make America great again, with this massive wallow text that was posted on the Truth Social account of Donald Trump. I miss when he was witty. I miss when it was just snappy witticisms thrown out there that really got everybody going. And
quiet, piggy.
Yeah,
it was just when it cut through.
Stuff like that was great, but now he's just started doing these wallow texts. He's, like, thankfully didn't post this one with the, thank you for your attention on this matter. That's kind of annoying that he does these days. But he's lost some of the charm with stuff like this, especially when he's like, the Republican Party's record-setting achievements this year. Which ones?
Well, I mean, shutting the border.
That's the only one that I can really give two thumbs up to.
I can imagine that there are a lot of people who are pro the tariffs.
That's fair, but still, it seems like deflection.
The attempt at Doge is noble, even if it didn't really go anywhere. I mean, there are a bunch of things they've done that I do like.
That's fair. That's fair. Still, though, for all of the things that were promised and either haven't happened or have been gone back on, the Epstein Files being the most notable one.
Yeah, he shouldn't have said that he was going to release them.
Yeah, people were a little bit understandable to want to figure out what's going on here. There were the further deflections. This was all spoken about on Monday when he was trying to call out Thomas Massey, who is the guy at the front of this particular story as one of the co-sponsors of the Epstein Transparency Bill, which has just passed, where Donald Trump was saying that, you're a terrible reporter for asking me questions about this. Thomas Massey's approval ratings are down the toilet. He should be getting on board with the Republican agenda. Bloody, bloody, blah. He just sounds like he is deflecting and scared of the subject.
He is.
Which he is again, now, flip-flopped back on in the past day. And this was this from the emails that were released last week. This was the big thing that people were talking about.
Yeah, the internet had fun with this.
This email exchange between Mark Epstein and Jeffrey Epstein, where people were having a lot of fun with this particular bit where he said, "Ask Putin if he has the photos of Trump blowing Bubba."
And who is Bubba?
Bubba was supposedly the nickname of Bill Clinton, which sent a lot of people going like, Oh my God. What's going on here?
It's when they were pulling out, tweets of like Trump saying things like, yeah, Hillary just doesn't know how to look after Bill or stuff like that. Like, what did he mean by this?
I think back to the Hillary Clinton one of, on this date, Bill Clinton will have the privilege of sleeping in bed with the next president of the United States. Was this prophecy?
I just can't believe Bill Clinton's game, man. Like, he's getting from everyone, everywhere, all the time. How does he do it?
It's the Irish charm.
Absolute stud. I mean,
clearly it is. This has been clarified that Mark Epstein has now said that this was not a reference to Bill Clinton.
Oh, wasn't it? It was a different Bubba.
This was just a completely different Bubba. He has said that he has declined to otherwise identify who this Bubba was. Personally, I think this is probably just like bro talk,
having a joke.
But who knows? Who knows? But it might have just been them like being funny.
The point is as well that regardless of what, you can speculate to the end of the day about what is the truth of it, but the internet is never going to forget this. This is just something now that is going to stick with these two people.
Everybody
forever.
Did start immediately pointing out Donald Trump's dance moves. That he likes doing. Oh, somebody's going to gif that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's clipped.
There you go. That will be at the end of the next Lotus Eaters Out of Context.
Yes, it will.
There you go. You can have that on loop. But this is mainly relating to now Thomas Massie's co-sponsored bill that has passed, which is the Epstein Files Transparency Act. You can see the summation of it here. And you can also find the full text of it here. Can I just go out of my way to say thank you, Thomas Massie, for making it so that the full text of this paper is only about a page and a half long.
Oh, thank God.
He's coming here from the Paul. Which one was it? Not Rand Paul. I've forgotten his name all of a sudden.
Ron Paul?
Yeah, he's coming at it from the Ron Paul School of Legislation.
I hate when they do those gargantuan bills. It's like, this is like 5,000 pages long and nobody has read it, and it's just cramming in BS.
Yeah, and we have hidden a load of stuff in it that's going to ruin the economy. Either way, so the summary of it is that the bill requires the Department of Justice to publish in searchable and downloadable format, which is nice compared to the Google Drive drops that happen where you can't search for anything. You have to just go through it text by text or document by document and hope that you find something. No, they're saying it has to be searchable. So if you want to search for a particular name, for instance, you'll be able to do that. It's to publish all unclassified records, documents, communications, and investigative materials in the DOJ's possession that relate to the investigation and prosecution of Jeffrey Epstein. Mm. I would imagine this also goes back to the 2007-2008 prosecutions and cases against him as well. This includes 1, materials that relate to Ghislaine Maxwell, 2, flight logs and travel records, and 3, individuals named or referenced, including government officials, in connection with the investigation and prosecution of Jeffrey Epstein. So we're hoping that through a lot of this, things like Alex Acosta saying that he had been given information that Jeffrey Epstein was attached to the intelligence community, which is why he was given the sweetheart deal in 2008. Mm. We're hoping that information like that will finally be clarified through this information drop that we are expecting now. The DOJ is permitted to withhold certain information, such as the personal information of victims and materials that would jeopardize an active federal investigation. But that does have some clarification within the document itself, within this bill, and it finishes in the summary saying, additionally, no later than 15 days after the required publication, DOJ must report to Congress, 1, all categories of information released and withheld, 2, a summary of any redactions made, and the bill is actually quite strict on how you redact things and whether you can redact things, which will be interesting to see how the administration tries to work around that. And 3, a list of all government officials and politically exposed individuals named or referenced in the published materials. Because that's one of the things that people are so upset about at the moment, which is that you can say, well, we've released all of these emails, we've released this and we've released that, but we want the specific names of who is incriminated
by
all of this information. And further, just to clarify a few things within the bill itself. So, for instance, with the redacted information, permitted withholdings, the Attorney General may withhold or redact the segregable portions of records that contain personally identifiable information of victims or victims' personal and medical files and similar files, the disclosure of which would constitute a clearly unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. It's a lot of stuff that you would expect and is quite common sense.
I mean, good on this one. You know, obviously, any graphic material should be redacted because that was one of the reasons that they didn't want to release it. Oh, you don't want to release this, dude. So just redact that.
It's all CP. Well, yeah. Thomas Massie, that was one of the criticisms that Massie got and referred to in some of the speeches where he said that they're saying that this won't protect against the release of CP.
Yeah.
It's literally in the bill.
Yeah, it literally...
Don't release that.
You can redact that bit. That's totally fine. Yeah. Obviously.
And any awful images of death, physical abuse or anything.
Of course.
But when it comes to the ongoing prosecutions and investigations, it has a provision here. Provided that such withholding is narrowly tailored and temporary.
Good.
And it says here as well, all redactions must be accompanied by a written justification published in the Federal Register and submitted to Congress. So you have to justify it. You have to be transparent with it. You can't just release an entire page of black ink.
Like they've done previously.
Like they did in the first wave.
Phase one,
Yes, which was pointless because those were already documents that we had where they just blacked out all the information that we already had.
Yeah.
Very, very strange. And again, you've got all of this stuff where you've got the categories of records released and withheld, summary of redaction made, including the legal basis and these names, and it all needs to be easily searchable.
Spectacular.
So it for such a short bill, it covers all of its bases.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that's left out.
Yeah, quite well. And this caused some controversy because a lot of people, like
are implicated in this and are going to go down for it, maybe?
Potentially. I don't know why you would think such a thing.
Yeah. Why would I think that?
But people do seem upset, particularly Mike Johnson, the House Speaker,
oh, really?
Was very against this for a number of different reasons. Mm. And Thomas Massie, before the vote went ahead, made a little speech where I think the most important and powerful part is at the end here. I'll skip to about 15 minutes in.
Gentleman from Kentucky is right. Gentleman has 5.5 minutes.
That is so. And we've had a lot of good men doing a lot of nothing on the other side of the aisle until we did something. Three brave women and myself and the Democrat caucus. We did something. And then what did they do? They've opposed us every step of the way. They've lied about the legislation. Let me tell you some of the lies they've told. They've said that it doesn't protect victims. Well, if that is so, why were dozens of victims with us today at a press conference urging this body to pass this legislation? It's because this legislation specifically protects victims. They've said this legislation does not prevent the release of child pornography. Of course it does. We have a specific provision in our legislation to prevent that. They've said so many falsehoods about this legislation, but now they're going to vote for it, hopefully enthusiastically. But really, they've been drugged to this. Our judicial system is broken. If it were working, there wouldn't be 1,000 victims who haven't seen justice yet. They are victims of the Epstein class. I begrudge nobody success that they become a billionaire. But if you think being a billionaire or buying politicians keeps you out of the judicial system, lets you rape young women, lets you traffic women, you've got another thing coming when this bill passes. Do not let the Senate muck this up. There have already been efforts to derail this, our discharge petition. The Oversight Committee has released thousands, tens of thousands of documents. That's fine. Keep working. How many names have you released? Zero. You are still protecting, or the DOJ is protecting, pedophiles and sex traffickers. The time for that to stop is now. Now, our speaker says, oh, this bill needs amended in the Senate, and specifically, he's trying to create a loophole. He's trying to categorize the pedophiles as victims. He's saying, oh, we don't embarrass the people that went to the rape island. We should protect those names against unreliable accusations. Is he calling all of these victims unreliable? They've testified to the FBI. The FBI has these names in their possession. I asked the FBI director in a hearing, have you looked at the documents? No, he trusts everybody that's been there for decades. That is wrong. Do not let the Senate muck this bill up. And if you are, if you're a party to that in the Senate, you are part of this cover-up that we are trying to expose. I am sorry if one of your billionaire donors is going to get embarrassed because he went to Rape Island.
Jesus.
I mean, he's given them no way to wriggle out of it.
It does give you an idea of the resistance that he's faced in the lead up to this as well, because people, this bill was drafted back in June or July, I believe, and has been struggling since then. You can hear from him that this has been a bipartisan effort, because the co-sponsor, the main sponsor of the bill, Thomas Massie, is listed as a co-sponsor. The main sponsor is a progressive Democrat called let me go back to find his name on the page itself. I don't want to get it wrong. Ro Khanna. So this has been bipartisan. Obviously, it's got people like Marjorie Taylor Greene involved as well. But it seems that a lot of the pushback has been on the Republican side. And Massie here is not just inferring, he's flatly stating that he suspects that a lot of that is to do with people wanting to protect their billionaire donors. Who might have been involved in this, who might be worried that their name shows up on that. And you never know that some of those representatives themselves might also show up on that. The email leaks from last week alone have already given a lot of people a lot to work with, in names who were in correspondence with Jeff Epstein as late as 2018. And that's right as the new investigation before 2019, when he killed himself, had begun to ramp up. That's when a lot of the media speculation and media reporting on him began to ramp up as again. And already we're getting news that a lot of beforehand thought trusted political operatives had already been in touch with him at that time, giving their sympathies. So a lot of people seem to be ready to lose a lot over this. Despite that, it seems that Trump rallied a lot of people together, because he flipped and said he was all right with all of this being released. And as a result, it was passed with 427 votes to one.
Well, Massie was saying that he basically was going to be able to pass it irrespective of Trump's endorsement. He said, look, I've done the rounds, I have the numbers, so either bear witness to, you know, America's either going to bear witness to the fact that your party is actually entirely split on this issue, and you're going to show weakness to the entirety of the American establishment, or just get behind it.
I don't understand Trump's positioning on this. It's been terrible. Right, this has been the one thing that Trump has been genuinely terrible on. And so we know that they were really good friends for a long time, until they fell out over a property dispute in Florida. And the only emails I've seen coming out that really, like, the people have been like, see, Trump told them to stop doing what they're doing. He knew. It's like, well, listen, everyone knew. Like, everyone knew. This is one of those open secrets in these spheres. And so to have Trump being like, you need to stop doing this, well, that's not terrible. Like, that's better than most, isn't it? I mean, most people just silently complied.
Well, I haven't seen those emails that you're referring to, so I can't say.
The Democrats, I follow a bunch of Democrats on Twitter, and they were posting it around, but it's like, but that's not actually the worst thing that could have come out of these. You know, that's Trump condemning them, and then you've got other emails of Jeffrey Epstein saying Trump's a bad person. It's like, oh right, Jeffrey Epstein thinks you're a bad person. Okay, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to make of that. You know, I don't take him as a moral source. So it's very, very strange, because I don't think Trump is actually implicated. As far as we know, he didn't go on the Lolita Express and go to Epstein's Island. So, okay, yeah, it's you know, it's kind of a gross thing to have connections with Epstein, but everyone had connections with Epstein.
I believe Virginia Guffrey is the one that they most often reference as saying that Trump didn't do anything.
Yeah, he spent time with her and did nothing.
And that is also, I believe, I've seen some reports that that's referenced in the emails as ones that were dropped last week.
And she said elsewhere as well.
Yeah, Epstein mentioning, like, oh, he spent time with this girl at my house for a day or maybe days at a time. So that does seem to potentially line up with what she said before as well.
But this is what I mean, though. Why is Trump so inconsistent on this? And the only thing I can assume is he's trying to protect a bunch of people who are going to be implicated.
As Firas was making the point on Monday as well when we were covering this, it's not just obviously going to expose, when all of this comes out in black and white, the dark heart of the American establishment, but numerous establishments around the world as well.
Well, this is why I think the Republicans are against getting this out so much, is because there are going to be certain close allies in the Middle East who might also be affected by this. Mm-hmm.
Well, I almost certainly believe that is probably true. Yeah. And also, let's be honest, our own intelligence agencies will be implicated with this. And that's the funny thing about the nay vote, the singular
nay vote. Who was that
nay
guy?
You can see there were five people who didn't vote at all. That guy was a man called Clay Higgins.
Okay.
And I looked into this guy very briefly, but what was going around on social media, on Twitter, was a clip of him at his door being asked by the cameraman or interviewer, you know, if you had to choose Israel or America, which one would it be? And to which his answer was, that's like making me choose between my wife and my child. I can't make that choice. As a U.S.
Which one's the wife?
House rep, I don't know. As a U.S. House representative, you should probably choose America.
You would think.
But also, I thought, okay, so it's just that he's some, like, Israel shill or something. And then I looked into him on his Wikipedia page, and the interesting thing was that back in 1992, it said, which is obviously 33 years ago, but this is a hell of a political journey that he's taken. It said that he was a supporter of Pat Buchanan for his 1992 Republican run for US president. Obviously, he didn't make it through the primaries. And also was a supporter of David Duke's gubernatorial run as well. So that is a hell of a political journey. I know 33 years is a long time, but to go from Buchananite / KKK supporter to don't make me choose between Israel and the US.
I mean,
very strange.
According to Track APAC, he's only taken $20,000 from Israel as well.
That's strange.
So that's not even a big number.
He says that the reason for doing so was that he was trying to stick to principles, worried that, similar to what Massey was pointing out there, that there's some people said that they had concerns that this will lead to false accusations from people. And to be fair, that's always a risk. That's always a risk. Yeah. You can't just take witness statements at purely face value, which is why I think a lot of the value of this comes from the actual documents that the DOJ has that will come from further investigations outside of just taking witness statements as well. But I do think it's important that we have access to all of this. The worry from here was, what's going to happen at the Senate? Are they going to delay it? Are they going to mend it to make it completely useless, worthless? No, actually.
Oh,
wow. It was passed in seconds. And Chuck Schumer, of all people, was the one who got it passed in seconds with no... It was unanimous. There were no votes against it. This was something that is very, very unusual. Mm. And it does make me suspicious that there might be some chicanery. I can't say what just yet.
No.
But I am suspicious that there may be some chicanery going on here, given that Chuck Schumer is the one who pushes it through the Senate immediately within seconds. Mm-hmm. But it goes through with no amendments. So on the face of it, where we stand right now, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's the best case scenario.
That's amazing, because the only person now that it stands between this bill and us getting the files within 30 days is Donald Trump's signature. That's the only thing. And he said that he's willing to sign it now.
You know what's weird is that Schumer in 2008 criticized Epstein's plea deal and called for government accountability on it. So he didn't want Epstein to get the sweetheart deal, which is a...
This is a principled stance by Schumer.
Good for him, I guess. You know,
perhaps the United States Senate is taking a principled stance on something, even against its own interests, maybe?
Strange times we live in.
I was going to say stranger things have happened, but I'm not sure that they have. No. But let's take it as a win.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Of course, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, has said that releasing the Epstein files without redactions could pose a national security risk. Again, you're allowed to make redactions. You just have to justify them.
Yeah.
You can't just redact entire documents away for no reason.
Instant straw man, then.
Yep.
Mike Johnson.
He has also been asked, coming out of the House of Representatives, what he thinks of it.
Any reaction to Leader Thune seeing the bill without adding amendments or changing it?
I'm deeply disappointed in this outcome. I think I've been at the state dinner. I don't know. I was just told that Chuck Schumer rushed it to the floor and put it out there preemptively. It needed amendments. I just spoke to the president about that. We'll see what happens.
So do you think he may veto it? You say you spoke to the president?
I'm not saying that.
Is he supportive of it in its current form?
We both have concerns about it, so we'll see. I was standing there with the Crown Prince. We couldn't call him.
Yeah, are you frustrated in the majority leader? Are you upset with the majority leader?
So he says he's deeply disappointed. Now, he did actually vote in favor of it, obviously. He is not the one guy who voted against it.
Yeah. Sure.
But he was seemingly hoping that the Senate would amend it heavily.
He was counting on it.
Yeah, he was counting on it. And the fact that they didn't is what he finds deeply disappointing. He also made this public statement as well.
National security concerns, okay? The discharge requires the Attorney General to release within 30 days, quote, classified information to the maximum extent possible. This ignores the principle that declassification should always rest and always has rested with the agency that originated the intelligence. Why? So that they can protect their critical sources and methods. It is incredibly dangerous to demand that officials or employees of the DOJ declassify materials that originated in other agencies, in intelligence agencies.
So saying it might cause a national security risk.
Yeah, but I mean, in his defense, he previously contradicted Trump, saying it's not a hoax, that the Epstein files are real and there is something there. So in his defense, he might actually be concerned about a national security risk.
I'll be interested to find out what that national security risk is, and if it is to do with the fact that Epstein was probably attached to the CIA in some capacity.
Yeah.
Because when he says, the methods used by the intelligence agencies, are you talking about Jeffrey Epstein and his island being one of those methods?
Yeah.
Because, again, I certainly believe that that is the case. I believe that that's the case. I think there's a lot of evidence showing that that is how the intelligence agencies have worked for decades now. And it also raises the question, if that is how these intelligence agencies get things to happen, and get people to work for them on side, that's not leverage that you just let go.
No, I mean, I suspect it's just one of the tools that they use, but yeah, it's definitely the case.
And it's also not a position that goes unfilled, even though the guy who was in charge of it has mysteriously done himself in a jail cell that was under 24-hour surveillance, except for that few minutes. What a shame. Again, now this just means that it's just Trump is the one guy in the way, and people... and then there is the worry now that Donald Trump, as it says in this article, has said he will sign the bill, which backtracks from his months-long opposition to its passage. But the Forbes are saying, here's why the DOJ's investigation could keep the Epstein files hidden, as the bill forcing release heads to Trump's desk. They say, while the bill requires the DOJ to turn over its full files on Epstein, the legislation carves out the few exceptions that we've gone over. Attorney General Pam Bondi confirmed last week that at Trump's direction, the DOJ is launching an investigation into Epstein's ties to such people in institutions as former President Clinton, Democratic mega donor Reid Hoffman, economist Larry Summers, and JP Morgan Chase. Legal experts have speculated the Trump administration will use that probe to justify not turning over many of the Epstein files under the federal investigation exemption, with former U.S. attorney Barbara Cade telling Time the DOJ investigation could be a strategic effort to block the release of further documents in the Epstein case. So I'm wondering if this being fast-tracked and going through is to do with that. That would require a lot of coordination and collaboration between Trump, Trump's DOJ, and even senators on the opposing side in the Democrats. But if this is as deep as it seems to go, then that's not outside of the realm of possibility. But we'll have to see if the legislation as it sits is enough to challenge that by forcing them to justify any redactions and to justify any withheld information for the time being. And plus, it is still on a temporary basis. If they withhold stuff over this investigation, how long will they be able to do so, and will they drag out whatever this investigation is to prevent that information being released, if it is as things appear right now? The thing is, though, Thomas Massie has said something pretty damning regarding this, which is, if they are trying to delay it, if this does happen, well, he's just gonna read the names of the clients publicly in the House. He said he would go that route.
Great.
If we hit all of the walls. So far, we're making it through the walls, but absolutely, I will read the names of Epstein's alleged clients if they try and halt this, if they try and ruin this. That's quite a threat.
He's a brave man.
Yeah.
That is quite a threat. So, you know, I applaud the fact that he seems principled enough to want to go ahead.
Honestly,
with this.
I'm genuinely worried about their safety. Like,
me too.
I'm sure many people are. I'm sure they're worried for their own safety, but if he does have the integrity to go through it at the risk of his own safety, then you've got to respect that.
Oh, I totally respect
that. You have to respect that. So I do see this at the moment as a win for Thomas Massie. We'll see if the administration or other forces within the government and the deep state try to withhold this information for longer and what tactics they use to withhold that. But for the time being, I'm excited to see what more information comes out. I'm excited to see people reporting on it, and I'm excited to be able to get all of this in a format I can actually bloody look through properly. All right, let's go through the Super Chats and Rumble Rants on this. Have you guys rechecked your Ancestry results? It had a huge update that changed a ton of results and got way more specific. Yes.
Yeah, we did that the other day.
Yeah. This just seems like a complete cluster on both sides. I have no clue what's going on. There seems to be more damage towards the Democrats than Trump. Potentially. G'day, everyone. Also, a bunch of Democrat judges also could prevent this from getting leaked as well. I keep hearing it. I'm not sure if it's true or not.
Well, if Thomas Massie just decides, yeah, I'm just going to go for it, what difference does it make?
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. Base Dave, it's my birthday today, so you have to read this out. Grow your mustache back, pussy. Can I get a good old warg?
I assume he's talking about me.
I assume he is.
I assume so as well.
But happy birthday, Base Tape.
Yes, happy birthday.
Happy
to
birthday.
You.
I would not have read that were it not your birthday.
And get
you best not be sending in more ridiculous things next week saying it's your birthday again, by the way. The engaged few. Threat to national security, afraid of losing blackmail material, are we?
Hey, man, like, national security is based on many things.
Yeah, mainly blackmail material, probably. A drunk changeling. A lot of Trump's actions make sense when you view them as him avoiding getting JFK'd. When he could put the blame of releasing it on Congress, he was all for it. Potentially. Cranky Texan, the word bipartisan usually means some larger than usual deception is being carried out, and that's a quote from George Carlin.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, he is often right about that, but on this, I mean, I don't know, man.
Cranky Texan, assuming real information does actually get released, if some of it doesn't elucidate Epstein's role in covert government financing and money laundering, then it won't be complete. That's fair. Yeah. Fair concern. Random name, watch how Massie will mysteriously shoot himself twice in the back of the head. As far as I know, the Clintons aren't involved with Massie yet. But anyway, Tom Rapp.
But they were probably involved with Epstein.
Yeah, well, I mean, where did that painting come from?
Yeah. Why did he have... Yeah, exactly. Why did he have...
Oh, wait, no, was that his painting or was that...
He had that in his Manhattan penthouse.
Was that... Yes. Epstein, wasn't it also... Was it one of the Podestas that had a weird painting of Bill Clinton as well, or am I getting the two mixed up?
The Podestas had other weird paintings, but I'm pretty sure...
Well, I know the Podestas had some weird
paintings.
I'm pretty
sure it was Epstein who had the Bill Clinton in a dress painting.
Yeah.
I'm just going to check that.
Tom Rat, glad to hear Harry reads Nine Gag also. I don't actually... Sorry, I don't. Massey's bill will do nothing, as Mike Benz has stated.
Yeah, it was definitely Epstein.
Yeah, okay, that's good. That's not good, but that's good to know.
It's good that we fact-checked.
Yeah. As Mike Benz has stated, the only thing you need to know is if Tulsi Gabbard has a file at the CIA on him. Well, I don't know that. And we don't know why the CIA didn't do a name check on Epstein relating to this. He probably was involved with them. And also, I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss that Massey's bill will do nothing.
Yeah, it looks like it's pretty solid.
It does seem pretty solid. We'll see if they manage to do some shenanigans around it, but we'll see. And lastly, for $20, thank you, I'm a truck driver, not Indian, real CDL, listening at 5 a.m. live in Washington State, Soygon of Applebee's strongest soldier.
That's what I like to see, but good man.
All right, then. Well, so yesterday in Dearborn, Michigan, the streets were defined by conflict and protests and marches between the Christians and the Muslims. Now, this was not quite of the same caliber as, say, the Battle of Arsuf or Jaffa, but it was still...
not quite that big as a crusade, but we're getting there.
We are building to something here. There does seem to be... again, it's just a symptom of the trajectory that many Western cities are now going towards. Yeah. And as a consequence of that, I obviously have a lot to say about all of the different sides of it. Before I do, though, I just want to point your attention towards the latest episode of Chronicles, because Stelios and I have recorded one talking about the final play of...
What? Sorry, just this screenshot that they've chosen of Stelios makes it feel like he's in a dating sim. and he's trying to seduce me.
He's trying to seduce Athena.
Makes sense.
Yeah, he does like Athena. Anyway, no, that's all right. Anyway, the point is, it's an absolutely fantastic play talking about all sorts of things between, oh, I don't know, blood feuds, vengeance, violence, civic law and the polity, and the consent of the minority as well, which is a sort of a decision that Aeschylus comes to, that actually peace cannot be established without the minority basically granting the higher wisdom that the majority have come to. And so what you're seeing with this play here, what Aeschylus is working through, is a transition from the old moral age defined by the Titans and towards a new, more reasoned sense of justice as exhibited by the Olympians and by the wisdom of Zeus. So it's a deeply philosophical play. Please do go and check it out if you're interested. So let's talk a little bit first, shall we, about the history of Dearborn. How did we actually get here? How did we get to it being the first Arab-American majority city in the United States? Well, in fact, as it happens, this goes back quite a long way. Now, you see, there have actually been Syrians and Lebanese people there since the 1880s, but these were, of course, Christians.
And a very tiny minority, no doubt.
Yes, and a very, very tiny minority. But due to Michigan and Henry Ford and his factories in the 1920s, that also brought in many other workers from that region of the world who were obviously happy to take the new wage that Ford was proposing. And then, of course, so then you have a few thousand within places like Detroit, places like Dearborn. And then, of course, the critical blow, as is the case with basically the history of America, was, of course, the Hart-Celler Act of the 1960s. Mm. And this ramped things up to comically unjust levels, and obviously was not what any American really wanted the trajectory of their cities to turn into. It wasn't in the mind of the founding fathers that they would hand away all of their cities built up by the European settlers over centuries to third worldists who have no consideration for the Constitution, for its heritage, and for the Anglo high trust society that America became.
They explicitly stipulated white European men of good character, didn't they?
Yes.
So.
Yes.
That was reaffirmed in 1924 as well.
Mm-hmm. And obviously this particular article from The Conversation is very, very proud of this change that has happened to Dearborn. And I think that these two paragraphs in particular are just worth reading, which is that, nevertheless, the Arab-American community continued to grow and diversify. Iraqi and Syrian refugee populations began to arrive in the 90s and 2010s, respectively, following wars in their homelands. Homelands, interesting word, not obviously native to America. They settled in Dearborn and on its periphery in Detroit and neighboring suburbs. Together, This new cohort of Arab Americans joined the established community in fighting back against Donald Trump's Muslim travel ban and other policies that discriminated against refugees, migrants, and Muslims by building alliances with Democrats and engaging with broadening civil rights coalitions represented by groups such as Black Lives Matter and the Women's March.
So they immediately formed an ethnic bloc and started fighting for their own interests against the interests of the white majority.
Many such cases.
This is such a good thing. I was thinking, so did you say that Ford and his factories were one of the reasons that people from that part of the world, I would assume Christians from that part of the world, migrated there in the first place in the early 20th century?
Yes.
Because one of the things I always think about, like Michigan and Detroit and Dearborn there, I always wonder if part of it is not, this is going to sound conspiratorial, a punishment for Ford being a very notorious racist.
No, it sounds like it was happening in his time.
But if Ford was one of the people who invited them there in the first place, then that's kind of a knock against capital, really. The capitalist invited a load of foreigners who ended up later being anchors for communities of more of them to come in.
On the plus side, at least we know that the coalition isn't going to last. I mean, if the example of Jeremy Corbyn's Your Party is anything to go by,
right?
We know that the Islamo-Communist alliance is going to break up very, very quickly.
Absolutely.
They couldn't even get an email name list out before somebody started trying to scam.
Couldn't even name the party. So anyway.
Quite true.
But you can see here it in clear black and white that what they did was they just behaved like Sadiq Khan, like Mamdani. Yeah. They used multiculturalism as a wedge to break the unity of the heritage of America, the white Anglo's heritage of America. And
kind of like strike busters.
Yes, exactly. And so, and then we got to this article from, I'm not giving you money, this article from The Guardian from just a month ago saying, "I don't feel safe anymore," says Dearborn's Arab Americans on the rising Islamophobia. Turns out that it wasn't, as the article just pointed out, actually a place with healing, safer, better communities.
And now you get to know how the Lebanese Christians felt.
Yeah, biodiversity. And so, naturally, as the Muslim population of Dearborn increased, Americans had to deal with particularly American Christian ambience like this. At 5:30 in the morning, every day.
So that looks like an otherwise really nice little suburban street. You look at that without the sound and you think, oh, I bet that's a very pleasant place. No.
Yeah.
No. Could have been.
No.
Should have been.
Ruined by foreign caterwauling.
Yes.
And obviously, if you think that you're going to have any sympathy from the mayor on this, I wouldn't expect so, given that
Mayor Abdullah Hamoud
doesn't seem to find any contention.
The noise levels are not an issue.
No.
Yeah, of course not, because it's your religion broadcasting the call to prayer.
Well, he assures us that the call to prayer is within the legal limits of what the sound can be.
Oh, well, there we go.
And so, therefore, what are you complaining about?
Yeah. But me going down your neighbourhood and honking my horn at 5:30 in the morning is also within the legal limits. Mm. You still wouldn't tolerate it, though, would you?
No,
traditional American call to prayer.
Yeah. And then, so he has other thoughts as well on multiculturalism and diversity, which we'll just hear him out on.
Because what you often hear that's accompanied with that as well, you must assimilate. I shouldn't put out a magazine that's in two languages. Why can't you speak English? Why are my videos subtitled in Arabic? Why is my caption both in English and Arabic? People get frustrated by this. But to me, it's like I actually disavow the use of the term the melting pot. I actually don't like it. Why? Because in a melting pot, when you're talking about like a soup, everything looks the same.
Right.
Where the salad bowl? The lettuce is lettuce, the tomato is tomato, the cucumber is cucumber. And they all complement each other.
Now, for me, the salad bowl simile is really just the Inglourious Bastards meme of this, because obviously America isn't a salad bowl; it's a steak. And what you're seeing here, really,
I thought it was a cheeseburger
or a cheeseburger. But what he's basically saying is, look, you have all these distinct flavors, and actually, you can just put Marmite in your burger or chutney. No, some ingredients.
Actually, I quite like the idea of Marmite in a burger. I've got to be honest.
Okay, well, that's ruined my entire.
I'm sorry.
This is why I don't trust you, Carl.
I'm a great cook. I don't know what I was complaining about.
But you take my point. There are some ingredients within the salad or the burger that are naturally a part of it. And there are others that simply don't belong in that dish.
But also, I mean, to say that we're going to move to your country and then we're going to repudiate the idea of integrating into your society and form our own ethnic enclaves, which are, I mean, what he is arguing for here, is basically just a colony. A foreign Arabic colony, Muslim colony, in Dearborn.
That gets the same benefits from the local states that everybody else should be entitled to. So what he's just saying is, let us be a parasite. Yeah. Let us be a tax parasite from you. Let us take your tax money.
I mean,
please.
It's literally just a foreign colony that is extracting resources from the majority native.
Mm. I would like to leech off of you, please.
And what's more as well, some of the Muslims who are growing up in Dearborn are, suffice it to say, quite radical. So had this here from Ahmad Musa Jabril, who served 6.5 years in prison for conspiracy, fraud, money laundering, and possession of firearms and ammunition, and is a popular figure amongst ISIS terrorists.
Oh, you know it's going to be good when you can see the memory TV popping right there.
So he is...
But this is exactly the sort of thing that you get from these sort of thing, these communities.
Local Dearborn man.
Yeah.
Just happens to hold the opinions that basically the assassination of Charlie Kirk was a praiseworthy action. And he condemned other Muslims who did condemn it. And he is obviously, very... just utter scum.
Why don't we have the memory subscription, guys?
Good question.
It'd be too blackpilling. So then, of course, I'm just teeing up with all of that to say this is the sort of environment that the people of Dearborn are living in. And so, naturally, you can't expect the white WASP heritage Americans to just accept this, to just accept the mayor coming out and saying, actually, we can speak in Arabic as much as we want. Actually, it doesn't matter if you wake up every single day and slowly see your culture and inheritance taken apart piece by piece, right? That doesn't matter. Yeah, that will kind of irk you eventually.
This is the thing I've been warning Americans about. When they, you know, they're like, oh, look at what's happening to England. It's like, well, it's happening in America as well, man.
Yeah, it absolutely is, and their demographics are worse than ours. And so I've purposefully... Right, one thing I just want to make clear as well is that there were different protests that were going on yesterday, and they were not of the same flavour, and I have different things to say about both of them. But for now, let's just talk about this one here, because this was led by Jake Lang, who was actually one of the... January 6th.
I was going to say, why do I know that name?
We have interviewed him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Or Josh has interviewed him.
Yeah,
he did. So one of the Jan 6th hostages, along with a, what was his name? Cam Higby as well. So these two people, and we can see the type of protest that they were putting on.
We're taking the streets of Dearborn.
So Americans against Islamization, American flags, all seems very sensible on the surface. But then you eventually had behavior like this. Now, I'm not saying it's not funny, but he went on to basically slap the Quran with a slice of bacon. At which point, what did you think was going to happen?
You know, I'm not even sure we should play it, being on YouTube.
No, all right.
I know that sounds, like, hypersensitive, but...
No, I appreciate the caution.
It's probably, YouTube.
Probably for the best. But anyway, obviously, as you can imagine, for all the Muslims, they didn't take that too well.
I can't imagine they did.
To understate the point. But the point as well is that this is not just walking down the street saying, we're Americans, we're still here. It's going straight to the most provocative thing.
Yeah.
To encourage violence and to basically treat this. All this is, really, is a video designed for clickbait.
Yeah.
Right? It's just designed for internet sensationalism. It's not actually addressing the concerns of the local people. It's entirely performative. Now, there is also this video from Cam, which I'm less interested in his position there and more for you to just get a view of the crowd themselves. Reminds me of England.
Yeah,
in many ways,
foreign colonists.
Right,
it's like taking a trip to Manchester.
Yeah,
Exactly. And so then we, of course, had more of this, more shouts of Allahu Akbar and all of this. But the thing was that everything that Cam was doing and that these gents were doing had this sort of smugness to it, right? The idea that they didn't really, it was really for their own clout, for their own visibility. And ultimately as well, they are very, very critical of the Islamization of the United States. And of course, why would you not be?
Of course.
Why would you not be? But also as well, we have to consider the fact that Cam recently met with Netanyahu.
Right.
And so we have that aspect of things as well. So like with many things, we have sort of a Zionist-backed agitation movement. But then simultaneously, we have the other protests that was going on. Now, this is, sorry, it's not a picture of him, but I'm going to start talking about Anthony Hudson.
Right.
Now, Anthony Hudson is actually currently running as a Republican candidate for governor. And he basically wanted to say that we want to protect America against Sharia law. He doesn't seem to be in with those people who I've just previously named.
He's,
And but what's more as well, his drawbacks are the fact that he is one of those boomers who doesn't actually want to touch the ethnic component of it.
Right.
And so both sides see a part of the picture, but they're not looking at it in the actual whole. And given the stakes that we're now at and how late the hour is.
Especially for Dearborn, being majority Arab.
Especially for Dearborn. But I think this is perhaps one of my broader points as well, is that if a solution is going to come to this, it's not going to be from within Dearborn itself, because, of course, by this point, being the majority demographic, the Muslims have the institutions. And so nothing can really be achieved by marching on the streets of Dearborn.
Yeah.
If a solution is to come, it has to come from the federal government.
Yeah.
It has to come from Washington. And some of the, when I drew on earlier, that radical jihadist who was saying awful things about the assassination of Kirk, he and several others were, of course, deported because of what was said. But again, it's 16 people.
Yeah.
And if these are the most radical and you see all those faces in the crowd, as I pointed them out to you, these are just the high-profile cases.
Yeah.
This is not just the average ghettoized community.
The community itself supports these people, which is why they operated in that community in the first place.
Exactly. Those communities gave birth to those radical figures, and so we have to suppose that the community is, of course...
is a reflection of their beliefs.
Exactly so. And so, really, what we have here as well is the problem is that Anthony Hudson... And I want to be genuine here. From what I've seen, looking around several videos of him, Anthony Hudson seems like a really decent man, right? He seems like a man who really loves America. He's obviously of heritage American, and he is deeply troubled about what is happening to... He is Texan, but obviously he's not looking at it by city. He's just seeing what's happening to his nation, to America as a whole, and this deeply concerns him. The problem is, of course, that if Anthony hopes to accrue any sense of political influence in Dearborn, then that necessitates giving at least lip service to the Muslims.
Yeah.
And so we have videos online of Anthony in the mosque saying, look, it's not as bad as they make it out here.
This is like the Democrat in Minnesota speaking Somalian, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
But I was about to ask what his chances are looking like.
Well, to be honest with you, I probably should have checked that, but I haven't, because ultimately...
I mean, if he's having...
He's a Republican.
If he's having to make these kinds of concessions, then it means no chance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can tell it's already... The battle's already been lost. And what's more as well, to just read a little bit further from this article, they basically... The Council on American-Islamic Relations Michigan Chapter, which is a thing... said that it welcomed Hudson's apology in a news release. The statement said that Sharia as a concept has been misunderstood. and used to ostracize Muslims in society. And so we welcome, quote, Mr. Hudson's remorse for his admitting fear-mongering against the Dearborn community and American Muslims in general, said Executive Director Dawood Waleed. We invite him to further discussions to learn about the Islamic faith and what Muslims generally believe, counter to false narratives and misinformation. So they're inviting him for a struggle session, yeah, for a re-education struggle session. And so, yeah, again, it just comes to a point. You are Americans, if you are serious about the survival of your nation, coming up to its 250th anniversary, and God willing, you'll have 250 more, you have got to address this root from the root of federal power. Mm. You're not going to be able to do this city by city, especially as the years go on and the demographics worsen. It's got to come from the top.
And the open borders came from the top in the first place.
Exactly.
So that's where it has to end.
Mm. And it cannot be basically used as a skin suit for provocation,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
by actors, yeah, who have foreign interests and foreign allegiances, nor can it be achieved through basically boomers who are not addressing the key aspects, mm-hmm, of to why all this happened in the first place. But nonetheless, for Anthony, I still do commend his bravery for going out there in a very, very hostile environment yesterday.
Yeah.
And not just one hostile environment, several hostile environments, because also the other crowd were graffitiing his bus as, mm-hmm, well, writing the word cook on it, which is mature and helpful.
Yeah.
And so there are shortcomings on all sides of this here, but if you are serious, if you want to address it, you've got to get your elected representatives into Congress, into the Senate, and you've got to bang the drum on this. There is no other way through. All right.
I'll need a mouse.
Yep, sure.
Thanks.
That one. From Zenothian, who says, I'm once again asking for Luca to regrow his mustache, and I'm once again telling you no, Zenothian.
You're going to get that a lot.
Why is it a no, just out of interest?
I just prefer not having it.
Oh, okay.
I only ever had it for that one period of my life when I, yeah, first started, and now that's how the gnomon they want it back. But yeah, I'm spiritually still
what
Captain Darling.
You should take the Harry tactic, right? Let me explain it to you. You have very distinct looks that people remember and recall you for and want you to go back to, but then you immediately start switching them up rapid fire,
okay,
one after another. So there are so many distinctive looks that nobody can ever point in mass to one that they want you to go back to.
Got it, Harry.
So just keep them confused.
I will. I'll be in tomorrow with
your hair
a suede head
as long as possible, and then overnight shave it for no reason. Grow out mutton chops, and then grow a monobrow, and then shave your hair, your face, completely hairless.
Yeah, you see, this whole purple shirt Joker vibe is really starting to come through.
Wear sunglasses on Lad's Hour for no reason, just to stand out from the panel.
You can just do things.
You can just do things.
All right, so AC75 says, Load Seaters, not so sure you want to push ancient Greek virtue, can't trust virtue ethics from a culture that's obviously not what Plato was writing about.
That's a massive overstatement as well.
So where are we looking?
It's a steel man. He's just talking about the Athenian penchant for younger. Yeah.
Metatron has an excellent video going through that, as does Leather Apron.
Yeah, really good.
They both have very good videos going through the evidence. Basically, what that is a progressive, massive over-exaggeration and cherry-picking of very scant evidence to try and paint a picture that is a lie.
It's propaganda. That's a random name, says... In the wild, apes often... Do I really want to?
You don't have to.
You don't have to read it.
All right. Wesley, 1924, says, whenever I order a salad, I pick out all of the olives. We should do the same. I like olives now. I'm not going to hear word against olives. All right, Carl.
On that note, I was going to call this, are you enjoying the melting pot? But actually, maybe I should call it, are you enjoying the salad bowl? right? Because we are actually living in the benefits of multiculturalism and diversity as was projected to us. So if we can get the next one up, please, Harry. We can see that the term melting pot, which is the one that they used to use up until about 5 minutes ago, came from this play by Israel Zangwill, who is an Eastern European Jewish immigrant to America, who wanted, ideally, for all races and nations to basically disappear. The play itself was about a world where, as you can see, all ethnicity had melted away, and he falls in love with a beautiful Russian Christian immigrant named Vera. And so you've got this particular section from it, where the hero David says, "There she lies, the great melting pot. Listen, can't you hear the roaring and bubbling? There gapes her mouth, the harbour where 1,000 mammoth feeders come from the ends of the world to pour in their human freight. Ah, what a stirring and a seething. Celt and Latin, Slav and Teuton, Greek and Syrian, black and yellow, Jew and Gentile," Vera interjects. "Yes, east and west, north and south, the palm and the pine, the pole and the equator, the crescent and the cross. How the great alchemist melts and fuses them with his purging flame. Here they shall all unite to build the Republic of Man and the Kingdom of God. Ah, Vera, what is the glory of Roman Jerusalem, where all nations and races come to worship and look back, compared with the glory of America, where all races and nations come to labor and look forward?"
Is that not just the Tower of Babel?
Yes.
Just build the Tower of Babel. Nothing could go wrong. It ended so well that first time. That sounds horrible.
Remarkable, yeah, as well, that it immediately goes to. And of course, we've got to start in America, where they're actually open to allowing. They didn't try to start it in China, for example.
True.
It's just turning the entire world into Brazil.
No one wants
which
that.
Which worked so well in Brazil.
As you can see, this is where the term melting pot was popularized. Mm. But you can see the insane idealism in it. Right, so everyone's just going to come here, become the same, and then we'll have the Republic of Man, and the Kingdom of God, and everything will be perfect, and everyone will be wonderful. So I thought we'd have a look at just how that's working out for us.
This is also a sentiment which has been widespread for years and spread by a lot of very liberal-minded people. Like somebody in the Super Chats had mentioned George Carlin. Yeah. George Carlin spoke in the 90s and early 2000s about how, one, he would like to see all white people gone. Interesting.
Oh, he probably was saying that since the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, and two, that he would like everybody to end up the same shade of brown through intermixing, which just sounds like a way to completely destroy all variety of culture.
Any culture gets destroyed.
Throughout the entire world. And there's also, what was his name? That Anthony Bourdain, or whatever his name was, chef guy. Yeah. There's that clip that goes around of him tasting different foods across the world, where he goes, "The only way that we can get rid of all conflict in the world is by just making everybody the same shade of brown." That's not how that works.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, let's assume that. Do we really think that would be the end of conflict? Do people only...
Well, I believe in the Middle East, a lot of them are all the same shade of brown.
Exactly. Yeah. Do people only ever fight over different skin shades? No! They have lots of different reasons to fight. In fact, very rarely is a war declared because the other guys are a different colour skin than me. But I can't even think about one that was.
It's also just this weird fetishization of the idea of mixed race people being better and superior in some magical,
or some
abstract
more peaceful
way.
Or something like this.
Yeah, it's just a weird form of racism.
But you can see that what this is essentially the liberal ideal, right?
John Lennon's Imagine.
It's John Lennon's Imagine. This is an old idea that liberals have always had in their heads, where actually we are not married to our place and time and purpose, and therefore we can just extract ourselves from the context in which we are born and raised, and the values and the norms and the customs and the cultures that we have, and we can all just become the same at the end of it. It's like, no, that's obviously not happening. And so how are things going? I mean, we're all living through the ethnic melting pot, or should I say the salad bowl at this point. And this is something that Anna Kasparian and Tucker Carlson brought up. It's like, well, hang on a second, this isn't perfect.
The other thing is, even if you're doing well, even if you're affluent, do you really want to live in a country where as soon as you walk outside your door, there's a massive homeless encampment?
Oh, I agree.
You know, do you really want to live in a country like that? Because I don't. Do you want to live in a country where close to 100,000 of your fellow Americans are dying of drug overdoses, and our government seems to not really care much, and in fact exploits that as a talking point to justify a potential war with Venezuela, which has nothing to do with fentanyl,
that's
by the way.
Sure. I know.
So it's everywhere, right? And the benefits of being in the salad bowl or the melting pot, however you want to describe it, are everywhere. And so, I mean, we've become Americanized just like America. You'll remember Ed Davey on the train going,
doing some champion dog whistling.
Accidentally based.
I keep saying the Liberal Democrats are a racial party. They are the racial party
of Middle
England.
They just don't realize it.
Exactly. They just don't realize that they are part of the salad bowl. They are like the lettuce or something. You know, a large amount of the salad bowl. And they're hearing the tomatoes and being like, why are the tomatoes making all of this noise? It's like, because you don't understand them. They're not like you and you don't understand them. And so Ed Davey gets like, ugh. Yeah, that was racist, Ed. That was you being a racist right there, which is funny. But that's
which is why this was your most popular post in years.
Correct, actually, which is why like you were actually hitting on a real issue that has come from the mixing in the salad bowl. Because they're not forced to adopt your customs, they're not forced to adopt your manners, they're not forced to adopt your ways, they still act as if they were back home.
It's a fantastic moment as well, isn't it? It's very telling because actually, you know, a lot of the Lib Dem voting heartlands are still obviously very homogenous. And so actually they're coming into contact with the diversity on the trains when they're travelling between places.
Yeah, when they're travelling to London, they interact with the diversity and they're like, my God, why are they being so rude? Great question. Why are they being so rude? If only we could understand.
So I mean, if we give every Lib Dem voter a week-long trip to Brixton, the party immediately is radicalised.
Free rail cards for Lib Dem voters.
Well, I've said this before. The Lib Dems are not actually haters of Britain. The second that machetes are running down their street, they're going to vote for the BNP. Like they just think that they can. They live in essentially the Isles of the Blessed, where nothing bad ever happens, and it's like, okay, but you're not going to live there forever.
There won't be a Shire, Pippin.
Exactly. Exactly, they're living in the Shires and everything's great, so they can't understand why you're such an evil right-winger. But they'll learn. Anyway, so there was this clip going around from an American train where this woman is trying to persuade, she's an elderly lady, and customarily, if, you know, Harry, you were sat on the train and there was an elderly lady there saying, oh, my legs are really hurting, can anyone give up the seat? I mean, you might think about giving up your seat.
Nah.
Not now.
I believe in equality.
Don't say that. You might have some money.
I'll give you money. I'm not asking for money. I'll pay you to get up off your seat and let an old woman. Any Gen X, boomers, nobody. I got money. I will pay to have a seat.
How about millennials?
What?
Millennials.
Millennials, Gen X, anybody.
Attention, nobody. Shop.
But all of the people around her.
That's a
tragic video.
Yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad. But this is the thing. Like in previous eras, it's likely that someone would have just got up and given her a seat. Mm-hmm. Now it's a bunch of people. You notice how they're all different ethnicities as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know, these people you know don't share anything between each other. They just. I'm not listening. I've got my headphones on. I don't care about any of you. There is no society here. This is the salad bowl.
Well, this is one of the things that's very informative about those Amazon studies that had been done on Amazon warehouses, where they had a diversity index, where they were basically trying to min-max everything within the factories to prevent strikes, to prevent the staff from unionizing.
Really?
And one of the things that they found was that a more diverse workplace was one of the biggest indicators that it would not unionize, that it would not begin striking and working as an organized collective. And that's what you see here. That's one of the reasons I perhaps feel like our countries have had their borders opened to let in so much diversity. This is something AA has spoken about a lot recently, and I do think it's true, which is that organized capital likes diverse workforces.
Yes.
Because one, it means that the price of labor goes down hugely. Two, it reduces the chances of them striking because none of these people get along anymore.
Yeah.
Even in the early 20th century and late 19th century, when the labor market in the US was flooded with new labor because of the abolition of slavery following the Civil War, what was it those new black workers were used for a lot of the time? Strike breaking. That happened a lot. They were being used, taken advantage of, it has to be said, by capitalists to break these strikes. That's not saying that we should all be communists or socialists or that markets are inherently terrible or anything, but from the perspective of human action, what people did, that's what happened.
And this is one of those points where the sort of Gary Stevensons of the world just can't discuss how this is being done. It's like, oh, I hate all the rich. Well, you're in favor of diversity and immigration. You're the one making them this rich. Your politics allows them to get to this point. But that Amazon thing, that might be worth going to a bit of a deeper dive on, because I've never heard of that.
I've spoken about it before, but I can dig it up again, because it is interesting.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, you get videos like this. This is a lady in Germany. I'm just going to play it with the sound. Because she's just like, you know, what is going on here? Just towns full of strangers. Just people who you don't recognize. They're just everywhere, and they're all from different places. This is the salad bowl at work. Does the place look better? Does it look like it's improved? I mean, you know, is this the kind of country that you actually want to live in? Where you just have small groups of people who, like, essentially cloister into themselves.
It really is indicative as well of how that whole idea that Israel Zangwill was putting forward of the melting pot, bringing the best out of everybody, was completely wrong, because it does destroy the diversity of cultures. Because you see her walking around like that, and you see the kinds of shops these people are opening, they are the same as are infesting so many high streets across England. It actually flattens everything down. All culture becomes the same. It becomes a monolithic non-culture.
It's exactly right. You know, the sort of international franchise that could be run by any people from anywhere and is always the same in all places. And just the general sort of nature of it, it's like, okay, we're going to get a couple of people from each different area of the world, and then we'll put them here, and in every city it's the same. So it's like, okay, but this is not actually different. You know, this is just sameness, just a kind of, you know, but again, I guess we say diversity is their strength on this. But anyway, so yeah, now you've got the sort of diverse society, you get lovely stuff like this, like, you know, the river of rubbish in Oxford.
Was this real? I assumed this was
AI.
No,
this is completely real.
I assumed
Harry,
it was AI.
Harry, can we zoom in a bit on the screen, just because the pictures are a little bit small? That's fine. Thank you, yeah. This is completely real. This is an industrially processed stream of rubbish that's just been fly-tipped in Oxford. Hundreds of tons of just rubbish. It's just great. That's just fine. Because nobody cares. Because
in Oxfordshire.
In Oxfordshire. In one of the most beautiful parts of the country.
The part that inspires Tolkien's
Shires. Yeah.
Now looks like this.
Exactly. This is just part of being in... Sorry, I keep saying the melting pot. It's the salad bowl. Mm. The salad bowl is where we are. There are, you know, diverse happenings everywhere. Like... immigrants stealing from the honesty boxes, which is great. I mean, you know, good. They've got the sense to cover their faces. But so you
can't. One of them did.
Oh yeah, one of them did.
Oh my god.
So you can't have honesty boxes anymore. You can't have the normal things that you grew up knowing about and expecting. These things are just, you know, not the way.
I mean, that should just be grounds for deportation right there.
Yeah,
of course.
Like, the honesty boxes, for me, is like the institution of the countryside. It shows that I am in non-occupied territory if there are honesty boxes. If they're going and taking advantage of that the same way they like to take advantage of everything to do with our high-trust society, gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just gone. I'm not even going to give you a boat or a ticket. I'm just going to give you some armbands and a life raft.
Yeah, but then there's, you know, there's stealing from honesty boxes. But then there's just these where it's just brazen shoplifting in, you know, major stores and stuff like that. If I'll skip ahead a bit. You just see them just looting. It's just looting. And then just walking out. It's like, look, man, I actually don't want to live in a salad bowl like this. If this is the product of the salad bowl, I don't want this. I don't, like, it doesn't personally affect me. But it does speak to the kind of tone and the kind of people that I'm sharing a civilization with. Mm. They're just prepared to just steal.
Okay, and that's one of the things. It's a psychological, psychic tone, an undertone that then affects everything that you do everywhere you go,
yes,
is because there is this knowledge nestled in the back of your mind, I cannot trust the people,
yes,
that I am surrounded by. I cannot relate to these people. Yes. If something were to bad were to happen to me for any circumstance, these people would not support me.
Yeah, they wouldn't help. And the thing is as well, like, okay, I don't break the rules because I think it would be wrong to say go and steal. But if someone doesn't think it's wrong to go and steal, what else do they think is not wrong? Like, I don't know that they're not prepared to go further than that and that this wasn't just an opportunity for them, right? Who knows? I don't know. And as you say, this ruins the trust in the society itself. We can't be sure of the people around us, so why would we want to live like that? But anyway, that's just, again, some parts of the salad bowl. But then here's another one. This was a debate from the Oxford Union. And it's just really remarkable how the salad bowl is full of people with so many conflicting opinions. This is the Oxford Union.
You know how many young English children...
I thought this
children
was Jersey Shore.
Right?
...would wish for the opportunity to go to Oxford.
I know. And instead, we've got hysterical members of the salad bowl screeching and shouting at them.
That looks like something straight out of a mid-2000s reality show.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
When they're at the club and everything breaks down.
Yeah. And yet, this is now the society in which we're living. This is just these are just normal events, occurrences... In the multicultural, like I said, I shouldn't say melting pot because they reject the term melting pot now, but in the salad bowl. So, okay, great. So let's go on some more diverse happenings, shall we? How about Tower Hamlets? Some things happened in Bangladesh. Now, I didn't look into this. I don't care what's happened in Bangladesh, but the Bangladeshi community in Tower Hamlets is bloody angry about something happening in Bangladesh. Can't even understand what they're complaining about because it's not in English.
Probably angry that the British government haven't built them an airport in Bangladesh yet.
Probably. Apparently, the ex-Bangladesh leader, Sheikh Hasina, has been sentenced to death over a crackdown on protests. So there were student protests in Bangladesh. I can see why the Bangladeshi portion of the salad is very upset about this, but I don't care. Why are they here? Why aren't they protesting in Bangladesh? Why are they in my salad? Like, this is the melting pot. This is the whole thing.
You sat there eating your salad. It's like, the tomatoes are going rising up against the against the lettuce. Oh, fantastic!
Yeah, exactly.
It's like they've come and spat in your meal.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's like genuinely like something. Someone has put something deeply unpleasant. But it gets more unpleasant, of course. You have. Apparently in Nottinghamshire, two men brandishing knives at a Christmas market in Nottingham city centre. So, you know, brilliant. That's great. That's just so great. I love this salad. This is the most delicious Caesar salad that I've ever had. It's just literally lunatics with knives in the middle of the salad. Why are they here?
Stamped like Caesar.
Exactly. It's like, this is just not what anyone asked for. And we've had this imposed upon us. And so the question is, okay, well, are we enjoying what they have done? Are we happy with what they've brought us? I mean, in Germany, you had a brilliant one. As you can see, large crowds of Muslim men walking through the Christmas market chanting, "There is no God but Allah, Allahu Akbar." Thank goodness. Let's watch this. There's something about this that genuinely annoys me on a I don't want to say spiritual level, but there is something about it that's like, you know, how has this been allowed to happen? You know, like the Christmas market, for anyone who doesn't know, is a nice European tradition where we go to nice little markets and buy little things for people for Christmas. They're always a nice day out. And this is just some sort of psychic attack on the very nature of the way that we carry on our society. I mean, if it's not enough that we have to have diversity bollards outside all of the Christmas markets, I mean, I guess we should be thankful they're not driving a car into it. But small pleasures, small upsides.
The thing is as well that as far as the establishment's history with dealing with this sort of thing is concerned, of course, every now and then we might, you know, thank them so gratefully that they've deported one person, five people, whatever it is, right? But the point is, everyone there should not be in Germany. None of them should be there. But the problem is as well that one of the reasons why the why people are getting so angry as well, they would have been less angry if the establishment had just had the foresight to go, well, actually, there is at least a standard of foreigner and their behaviour in our country that is unacceptable. But the what we didn't even get that.
No.
It was actually, no, once they're here, they are here in perpetuity, regardless of whether or not they're the worst scum in the world.
And they can act as an anchor to bring all of the rest of their family
as well.
And, you know, and moreover, there's no obligation put on them, right? As in, like, if we were going to have immigration, we should have said, right, there will never be a foreign temple and a foreign church, a foreign mosque or whatever in this country. If you come here, you will adopt Christianity. If you come here, you will dress in this way. You will live in this way. And if, you know, if we were serious about immigration and integration, then we would have had really overbearing rules for immigrants.
I disagree. There is one obligation put on them, and it ties back to my former point, which is spend.
Okay, fair. Good point.
You are an interchangeable cultural economic widget.
Yeah, that's true.
You come here and you keep money changing hands at our markets,
yes,
our big corporate corporate stores.
But the point being, if this was actually being done for the good of the population, then it would have had, it would have come with really overbearing social rules.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't, because exactly right, it was done for capital, no doubt about it. And in fact, they're completely honest about it. They're like, yeah, well, what about the GDP? Well, okay, the GDP hasn't gone up. Now what? You know, do we get rid of these people then?
After Brexit, there was that guy who ran, I think he might still be in charge of Next, Lord Wolfson, who said that, I'm hoping that there are no immigration restrictions put in place because we need the workers.
Well, Boris heard you loud and clear, Lord Wolfson.
Yeah, because it's not like English teenagers could ever get a job at Next,
well, they
like all
now
of my friends did out of school.
Yeah, and then just finally, like, you get these events where it's just on the underground. Apparently some kid with a machete ran past and everyone's panicking.
Apologies for this delay, people. We've got an emergency alarm fall on the train. I'm going to be going back to investigate in a second.
I'm sure everyone's glad to be in the salad bowl at this point. You know, there are, someone's just become a statistic.
Yep.
And this is the reality of their lives. And so if we, you know, just go back, you can see, like, yeah, you've got homeless, you've got, you know, the sort of
public
range of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've got public disruptions, you've got impoliteness, you've got the general degradation of the area, you've got the increase in crime, you've got the complete antisocial behavior from self-interested groups who don't care about you at all, and then you get to the violence and to the actual danger, and you have to ask yourself, well, was this what we were promised? And the answer is probably yes. This is what they wanted, the salad bowl. Why are we giving up our countries to this?
All right, we've got a few more Super Chats and Rumble Rants coming. I'll read one that is addressed directly to me from Cranky Texan saying, "Thank you, Harry. Looking at geopolitical events from the perspective of organized capital, I think it's important to add international in there as well. As you put it, makes everything seem much more rational and evil. Look up inverted totalitarianism." I will do, thank you. And yeah, I just want to add a clarification. People should absolutely have opportunity to make money, start their own businesses, and to you know, become, you can become billionaires, you can become capitalists, but I do think there needs to be some kind of guardrails mandating that your actions, if you become a large organization like that, have to be directed in the best interests of the nation as defined as a people in a time and place with a cultural and ancestral continuity.
Moreover, why should they be allowed to deform the society they're benefiting from? That's the real question, right? Because, like, okay, we're going to bring in loads of workers. Why? Why would we allow that? You know, like, I agree with you. Obviously, you know, I'm a business owner. But it's, I don't want to change the society in which I live. You know, and the fact that they're just obviously so cavalier about all of that just for profits, it's awful.
I will just say as well, it's a remarkable testament, actually, to the endurance and genius of our ancestors that England is even still alive after everything that it's basically been made to withstand over these past decades.
Yep.
It shows what a robust society we actually inherited.
We have a strong temperament.
Yes. Okay.
Should we go to the video comments? Sorry, we're running out of time.
Sure, yeah, okay. I don't have a mouse.
Our high-trust society is already gone, especially in the cities, but we're very aware of the problems that there are, and there seems no signs of a solution in sight, just conflict. Lebanonization beckons.
That is the worry, that if it's not solved, people like, what is it, that Patrick something or
Patrick Deneen.
Maybe. One of the ones who's constantly talking about civil war.
Oh, David Betts.
David Betts. Yeah, that's his name. I was thinking Patrick Bett Davis, who's that? The podcaster, isn't he? David Betts. This idea of civil war, like it'll all just reach a flashpoint and explode, and then all of a sudden it'll be one side pitted against the other. I do think that things are, you know, pitted sides already.
Sure.
The thing is, I agree more with those who assess this as resulting in more of a low-level conflict that sparks up every now and again and then goes back down. Because we've seen across the third world how people can just kind of put up with low-level conflict for their entire lives, as long as there is a government, even an unstable government, in place, people will just kind of get on and try to avoid danger as much as possible without there being a massive revolution. That's what I worry about, that it goes on forever.
A teddy bear with anatomically correct innards. A pink sentient switchblade.
Hi, Beth. You've gotten taller. Shall we resume stabbing?
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right.
I hadn't even heard about that.
Yeah, me neither.
I would like to share with you all some sections that I've highlighted of Mary Richmond's Wikipedia article, where I couldn't help but notice some rather heavy bias, including the fact that it says she was apparently around such strong, intelligent women, i.e. her grandmother and two aunts.
I'm not familiar with this person.
I'm not either, but no one's ever accused Wikipedia of being neutral.
No, which is why it's better that we have Grokipedia now.
Yes. Did you see that clip of one of the co-founders of Wikipedia being asked on a podcast?
Jimmy Wales.
Yeah, if he was the co-founder or the founder, and he just like storms off at being asked the question.
Because the other co-founder's based.
Yeah.
And he keeps speaking out against it.
He keeps saying, don't trust Wikipedia.
Yeah. Like everyone's genuinely outraged about this, and rightly so.
Actually, this is completely fine. Why? Because until the appropriate response to this is actively promoted and endorsed by every single person in quote-unquote power, I don't care. The countryside can be destroyed. If that's what's necessary for every single leftist to denounce their position, so be it.
Honestly, there's a part of me that really wants to endorse accelerationism too.
Well, leftists aren't going to give up their positions. Yeah, this is like the thing that you've got to understand about democracy is it's not actually democratic. Everybody overnight could come over to our side, but if the actual positions being offered by those in power aren't what we're after, you won't get it without some kind of infiltration or revolution.
To be fair, I think there is something interesting that's happened with Shabana Mahmood recently, which is you've doubtless seen the clips of her being the most radical leftist in the world prior to the advent of her getting to government. And then she's like, oh no, the system's ruined and immigration is out of control. So it's like you can see how it's, you know, ideologically she feels a certain way, but then actually, oh, I want to make sure this system persists into the future. Well, I can't. I've got to do something about it. And so, you know, Carla Denyer and whatnot, you know, screaming she's a fascist. It's like, well, maybe your BS is just nonsense. You know,
it sounds like she's
the most, momentary contact with reality. It's like, yeah, no, all of this has to be fixed.
Well, she's realizing as well, and this is the thing that Mahmood is realizing: if we don't do something, some sort of gesture, then basically we're going down. Not just we're going down; the entire immigrant class is going to be pointed at,
yep,
and saying, you keep advocating for your own interests. So she's got to show some interest to what the majority wants. And meanwhile, the brain-dead zealots in the backbenches can't get it into their heads that she is actually still fighting on their, yes, side. She's just thinking two steps ahead of them.
Exactly. She's fighting for the system that has brought this about.
Yes.
Not for some radical change.
Mm-hmm.
In case there were any red pills today, here is my kitten's first reaction to this fish toy.
Doesn't look like he trusts it, does it?
Oh, he's got his little tongue stuck out.
I love cats.
Oh, that's just so sweet.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
My wife sent me a video of all the, like a compilation of cats trashing everything in their house. Like,
they
just
do,
you know,
that,
yeah,
sometimes.
Well, I've got six cats, and none of them do. Yeah, I know. Well, my wife wants. She,
more
babies, but instead we end up getting cats.
At least you already had children, though.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Made that decision without having children at all.
It's like, you know, can we have another baby? No, we cannot have another baby. Signed up with another kitten, which is not the worst thing in the world. But they're all really placid and like they've never wrecked anything. He says, crossing his fingers. So I'm just like watching these cats like spurging out and ruining it. I'm like, I mean, I'm glad this doesn't happen, but you know, I don't know.
See, my parents have two cats. I can't have cats because sadly I'm deadly allergic to them.
Right.
So if I'm in the same house as them for too long, I start to die. But my daughter loves the cats, who are normally so well behaved at my parents. But my God, it's like my daughter is trying to get them to destroy things. One in particular hates. She just legs it the second my daughter even gets like any.
Is she too rough with them? Is she?
No, this cat was a stray,
right,
and like grew up a stray, so she's just very, very skittish,
right.
And she does not yet trust my daughter, which is fair because she is a toddler.
Yes,
but she does like she normally very gentle, but every so often she'll go like, "Oh, that tail looks funny."
Yeah. Yeah.
It's bad.
Well, we've got we had two polls today, and it seems that Carl, you win best tie presenter with a respectable 56% of the vote.
I was happy
and,
with this tie.
My sleazebag look didn't win any points today,
I can't
did it?
Believe
no.
It.
Although, unfortunately, and I'm less enthusiastic about this result, 64% say that I should get a buzz cut.
Well, don't worry about democracy, Luca.
What they don't realise is I hate democracy, and I don't accept its results, so we won't be doing that.
I think we also do have one more video comment from Zesty King.
Okay.
I'll take it. I'll take the ring to Mordor.
Is the audio on?
Mr. Anderson, even in this secret council meeting, you seem inevitable.
What the f-
What?
There's a great comment.
That was his original cut. The studio was furious.
There's a great comment by Thane Scotty here that I want to read before we end. Calling them the Epstein class is such a baller move. It's perfect thick language and we need more speech like that. Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm.
The Epstein class is a good way of delineating them from us.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right, then. I've got time to just read one or two from mine. AZZ Desert Rat says... Lord Inquisitor Hector X says... if you want to look into Dearborn more, there are tons of Muslims and Indians committing healthcare fraud in Minnesota.
No kidding.
And the state is turning a blind eye to it, and it's so blatant. Yeah, none of this surprises me. Again, these problems in every city across the West, wherever they go, they bring the same problems.
Well, again, the whole point of the welfare state was it was a high trust society. We were here to like help. Oh, we'd like to help those people. Yeah, on the assumption that they wouldn't try to exploit the system.
Mm.
I mean, it used to be it still is in many ways a point of shame to be receiving welfare from the government. But if you don't recognize that as a cultural touchstone, why would you care?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I'll just wrap up with this one from Roman Observer from your segment, which is just that we need more Caesar in this salad.
That's a great point.
Well, I just want to read two very quickly honorable mentions. One from George Happ saying, Happy International Men's Day.
Oh, I didn't even
know. I forgot that it was. Yeah. Happy International Men's Day to all of the chaps watching out there. also Samson saying, "Hello, lads, watching from an onsen hot spring bath with sake and beer in hand."
Well, I'm glad you're having a good time, Samson.
That's awesome.
That's great, man.
And a babe on each arm as well, I assume. For Harry, "I actually had lunch last week with one of the artists who worked on Silent Hill 2 and 3, apparently, and didn't realise, a friend of one of my uni mates somehow." That's awesome. And PS for Luca, "It's not my birthday, but can you grow the mustache back, please?"
Anyway, that's all we've got time for today, ladies and gentlemen. You can join us at 1 p.m. tomorrow. Hope you've enjoyed the show and enjoy the rest of your day. Take care.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
By law, 21 plus, terms and conditions apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.